Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege to welcome to the Solaria Report Karen Wang Diggs, who is a marvelous person, entrepreneur, and chef, who's had quite a success with her crowdfunding campaign. And I have met Karen through a mutual friend and been most impressed. Our mutual friend emailed me as the campaign started and said, "Oh, you've got to go look at Karen's campaign." And I felt overworked and obliged, and I kind of, groaned and went and looked and knew I had to. And suddenly, I saw that Karen had a product which solved a problem I'd always had, which is I wanted to eat more fermented fruits, but every time I looked at the idea of making more myself, the system was too complicated, and I just said, what a marvelous idea. I must have one. Well, apparently a lot of other people said the same too, because her campaign was quite successful. And it's a perfect example of the kind of product that that crowdfunding is so well suited for. And so given the success of what she's doing and the campaign, I couldn't wait to get her on the Solaria Report to talk a little bit more about crowdfunding. Let me just describe a little bit about Karen. She's both a chef and a certified nutrition consultant, and she graduated from the California Culinary Academy and then worked as a chef in Hong Kong at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. I used to live in Hong Kong, and that's very impressive. And she also helped to open two eateries in Hong Kong. And if you know how wonderful the food is in Hong Kong and how competitive, that is also very impressive. She decided that she needed to learn more about nutrition, become a nutritional consultant. And so she got her certification, graduating from Bowman College in 2006. And it's an extraordinary combination of both understanding culinary skills and nutrition and helping people achieve their health goals through better health and better nutrition. So, Karen, it's just wonderful to have you on the Solaria Report. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It's a great pleasure to be on. And I'm really excited to share what I've learned in this crowdfunding journey.
Well, tell us first about, because, you know, in the Solaria Network, everybody loves fresh food and has a passion for health and fresh food. So tell us about how your passion for health and cooking started and got going.
Sure. Well, first of all, I have to give gratitude and thanks to my mother, who actually did not cook. So because she couldn't cook, it sort of triggered the incentive for me and my siblings to cook when we were very young. So I remember vividly my first experience scrambling an egg in a little frying pan. And so I started at the age of maybe 5 or 6 to cook for myself, because although I come from a family background, or you could say a cultural background, where we valued food a lot. My mother didn't cook. We actually had an aunt living with us when I was young in Hong Kong who was a phenomenal cook, and she did everything by hand. You know, she wouldn't even buy ground meat. She would chop everything herself, everything made from scratch. So I think the combination of my mother and the exposure to my aunt, who was a great cook, sort of instilled in me this passion and desire to seek out really good food and to sort of master the art of cooking myself. And so later in life, when I realized that I wanted to turn my passion for cooking into a profession, that's when I decided to attend culinary school formally and get that education and training.
And what was it like working as a chef in Hong Kong? Because I think of Hong Kong as one of the great food capitals of the world.
Yes, absolutely. It's just, I mean, one of my fondest memories of food is, you know, definitely a lot of it stems to Hong Kong. But after I finished studies at the California Culinary Academy, I just decided I would go back and and see what it held for me there professionally. So I literally just got on a plane after graduation, landed in Hong Kong, and I walked into the lobby of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel and asked the concierge if I could see the head chef. I didn't really think it through. Fortunately, they didn't turn me away, and she brought me to the back of the kitchen. And the time that I was in Hong Kong, which is the early 90s, the standard was that there were a lot of European chefs. There are Swiss, French, German chefs. So I stepped very quickly into that world where, you know, there are all these expat head chefs there. And because they couldn't speak Cantonese, and I could, I was kind of the go-between the executive offices and the local chefs that worked in the various kitchens. So it was a great learning experience, but it was also really, really fun and at times almost like a comedy because various things that happen. You know, things get lost in translation. Cooks really, sometimes the local cooks don't really share the same passion or standard of quality as chefs who are trained. And then so there are a lot of things that happen which, you know, you have to take everything with a sense of humor.
I can't imagine translating between a Cantonese sous chef and a Swiss chef.
I had to work with a German chef whose accent was so thick I could barely understand him. At the end of the day, yeah. It was just exciting to put out, you know, excellent, good food.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And the eateries that you worked with, where were they?
So after my time at the Mandarin, I was lucky enough to be approached by a couple of different groups of people. So the first one was a private investor who had always dreamt of opening a restaurant. He was actually from Hong Kong, and his wife was of Spanish ancestry from the Philippines, and they wanted to open a Spanish restaurant in Hong Kong. So through connections, he contacted me, and so I was lucky enough to be able to take a project from the scratch, you know, develop a menu, look at different spaces, and to build a kitchen from the ground up.
It was wonderful.
Space, you know, because in Hong Kong, everything is small, really. But it was a great experience. And then after that, other people approached me to open a small wine bar, which is in a very popular area in Hong Kong called Lan Kwai Fong, which is very close to Central, the main business district in Hong Kong. And that was really fun, too, because we brought in all types of different wines from around the world, a lot of new world wines, and paired it with just very simple food. And we also put an emphasis on coffee, too. Good coffee.
Oh, wonderful.
Food. Yeah.
I worked in a nightclub in Central District, and it was always, it was always remarkable to me the flow of people coming through. So
in such a small area, just thousands of people every evening, every weekend.
So how was it that you decided to come back to study nutrition?
Basically, I was completely burned out. After 7 years in Hong Kong, I was just physically tired, mentally stretched, and I missed California. I missed the blue sky.
Yeah.
I miss the slower pace. I miss that you could go to the movie theater and not be surrounded by 1,000 people. So, that's what brought me back. And, of course, I miss my family here, too.
Yeah. So tell us about crowdsource, because I think crowdsource is such an ingenious thing, because I can't tell you, Karen, there are no words to express how many times I have looked at fermentation and then said, this is way too complicated. If I buy all this stuff, I will never do it. So when I saw Crowdsource on Kickstarter, I went wild. I was like, I must have this. Finally, somebody's figured this out.
Thank you for your excitement and for your positive comments. Well, first of all, I do have to say, you know, I have my business partner, Eric Klein, to for the excellent design. He, by training and education, is a product designer and engineer. And also, he comes from a family of inventors, so he knows how to write a patent, which is very important.
Yes.
So initially, I came up with the idea after I studied nutrition, and I realized the health implications of having truly homemade fermented foods in your dietary regimen. And also, to me, it was a lost art, a culinary art that has gone underground for the past few decades because, you know, since the 1940s, we've had TV dinners and fast food and industrialized food that completely decimated the idea of any food that has live bacteria. And what it was really—
Now, I also have to just say, my recollection and my experience is that Chinese cooking has a lot of fermented foods. Is that not the case?
In Asia, yep, in general, a lot of fermented foods. So growing up, I was used to it, but I never really thought deeply about the health implications.
Right.
And so, therefore, the idea of lacto-fermented foods or foods that have live cultures in them wasn't foreign. But even for me as a chef for many years, it, you know, the process of making fermented foods just wasn't part of my cooking routine until I studied nutrition. And so that was a really good awakening for me to go back to my cultural roots, but then to also look at fermented foods from around the world. And from a nutritional therapeutic standpoint, to really study what the lactobacilli bacteria that are thriving in cultured foods can bring us, as far as health, can bring, you know, can up the health benefits for us. I think the most familiar one for most of your listeners would be yogurt or kefir, which is a similar thing to yogurt, but more of a drink. So these dairy fermented foods, I think, are very familiar to many people.
Right.
The idea of turning vegetables, you know, like cabbage into sauerkraut and all of that, probably people know it as, you know, having sauerkraut with hot dogs, but the idea of making it at home, you know, has been lost for, like I said, for many decades. So that was an incentive for me to start fermenting at home, which I did in traditional crocks. And some batches would turn out really good, and some batches would turn out really slimy and terrible. And so I did years of that. And finally, I purchased a crock from Chinatown here in San Francisco that had a ring around it that looks like a little moat. So a little indentation where you fill the moat with water, and then you cap it with a bowl so that the your fermentation is sealed. When there's a water ring, oxygen cannot get in, but what's fermenting inside the jar will allow the CO2 will be developed as it's fermenting. So the water seal allows the CO2 to escape, but it keeps new air from getting in, which is really important in fermentation. Plus, it's also important that you keep everything submerged. So I was thinking about what a great idea this is. You know, it's been around for hundreds of years, and the Germans also have something very similar. The problem with it is that you need to make a really big batch. And these crocks are either made of ceramic or glass, which makes them very fragile. So if you have a big batch and if you need to move it, it's sort of a hassle. So literally in the shower thinking, what a great idea if we could only shrink it down to fit onto a mason jar. And that's when the idea just, it just really came to me in the shower. So entrepreneurs.
And mason jars, you know, it's so easy to get a mason jar. But the other thing is mason jars are something everybody knows and loves and feels comfortable with.
Yes, exactly. And right. It's something that, you know, you give to someone. You make jam or preserves in the mason jar. You give the mason jar to someone. And then someone will inevitably give the mason jar back to you. So in a way, it's a very community-based idea of sharing mason jars.
Yeah.
And so that's how the idea came. And when I explained that idea to Eric, he came back and said, you know, I think we can make this into a patentable design. So that's really how we started about 2 years ago.
Fantastic. Well, now in the meantime, at some point you must have learned about crowdfunding. How did you learn about crowdfunding and how did you come to decide that you would try it for crowdsource?
Right. Well, personally, before launching our Kickstarter mid-July of this year, I supported probably about 8 to 10 Kickstarter projects.
Uh-huh.
I probably learned about it, let's say, in 2012 or so. And the first couple of times, actually, the first project that I backed wasn't successful. But I just really love the idea that you can support someone directly. You know, they have a business idea and you can just say, okay, you know, I understand your idea. I like it. It's community based. For me, I chose a lot of projects that were community based and environmentally connected.
Right.
So I've backed a couple of musicians. And so it was really fun for me to watch the process of crowdsourcing. And I mainly did it on Kickstarter. I probably supported also a couple of projects on Indiegogo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just nice to watch the success of a project come through and the changes that it can make for a small business owner. And the other thing that I like is instead of needing to go to the bank and borrow X amount of dollars and, you know, do all the paperwork, the credit check and everything, when you do a crowdfunding project, such as with Kickstarter, you get immediate feedback.
Right.
And I realized that in our case, because we were putting together a product that's a kitchenware, so even if the Kickstarter were not successful, we would have done marketing. Like it was a natural way to test a product.
Right. It's kind of building your first customers and doing your market research and figuring out your advertising. Yeah, it's
all of that at the same time. So I think for me anyway, I just felt it was a really, really good way to approach how we would look at crowdsource and how to fund it.
I looked up, as I was preparing for our discussion, I looked up some of the statistics, and it appears that it's critical in the first week that you get 30%, and it said that the average...
I didn't know that.
And the average successfully funded project, I was surprised, was $7,000.
Wow.
So,
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so let's talk about your crowdfunding process.
Okay.
How did you go about it? How did you design the campaign? How did you do it?
Okay, well, prior to launching, I would say 6 months prior, I did do a lot of research, and Eric did as well. So I, you know, online, I found a number of resources. And I also took a few online classes on, you know, how to do a successful campaign. But I think the critical factors in it was that during those few months prior to launching, and we didn't actually know exactly when we were going to launch, I started building up my community. I went to different events that I thought would be useful, where people would be interested in fermentation and crowdsource, and just started speaking to different people who would be interested. And then the other thing that I did was I actually contacted several people who had very successful Kickstarter campaigns. One is a guy out of Chicago, and I went to a houseware show, and he was a presenter there. So I approached him and basically looked at his campaign and how he laid it out and everything. And, you know, I kind of used his campaign as an inspiration for my own. And there was another campaign from someone locally, and she also did a very successful campaign. So I threw myself on her because she was local. I asked her to go to lunch, and I really tapped into how she made her campaign successful. So, you know, a couple of successful campaigns, I looked at what they did and, you know, picked out bits and pieces that I felt would be applicable to crowdsource. So that was enormously helpful. And by the way, these two campaigns, both of them exceeded 100K.
Wow.
So maybe it was a good thing that I didn't know the average success was $7,000.
Well, you originally launched, your goal was to raise, I think, $35,000, and you raised $186,000.
Right. We came out with the $35,000 because we were just looking at the cost of manufacturing, not the units, but just the tooling cost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some other cost that has already been incurred in our process. So we wanted to be reasonable, and we didn't want to ask for something that we felt was too much. Because, you know, as you know, on Kickstarter, if you don't make your goal, you don't get anything.
Right.
So we were a little bit on the conservative side, but we asked for $35,000, and the astounding thing was that we hit that in 3.5 days.
Oh, my word.
So,
how wonderful.
So it was really wonderful looking back at it because when we launched at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then the process was I literally sent out emails to a lot of people that I know, but individually. I didn't want to do a mass email because I felt that it wasn't in the spirit of what I wanted to do with crowdsource.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to build a community. I just felt like individual emails were very important for me. So, you know, I would send out email to, you know, to Susan, to Peter, to Bob, but I would have little individual things like, how's your dog? You know, how's your
right.
Long
right.
time no see. This is my Kickstarter campaign. Would you mind going on and supporting me if you feel like it? So it was very individualized in the beginning, and I'm really glad that I did that because obviously it paid off.
Right. Right. Well, I remember because we have a mutual acquaintance, which is how I discovered it and how I met you. And she was adamant, you have to go there right now.
Yeah.
It was very personal.
Yeah.
And but I, you know, I think part of it was that if you look at the product really hits the spot. You know, it's something that that really solves a need that people have, which is how do you make fermentation something that's small batch, light, easy, convenient, and it's quite remarkable. So I think you had a combination of both a very well thought out campaign with a very well thought out and excellent product.
Thank you, and I would have to say there was a couple of organizations that I tapped into, which really helped me. One is Slow Money. I don't know if you're familiar with Slow Money.
Uh-huh, yes.
They were inspired by Slow Food. So the local chapter, there's a gentleman called Peter Reddick and also his friend Thomas Atwood. I met them through a networking thing, and they were very kind to take interest in crowdsource. So the day I launched it, I actually went to one of their regional meetings and gave a presentation on crowdsource and what I wanted to do beyond crowdsource. And I think by doing that and honing my vision of what I would like crowdsource to generate in the future, kind of held that idea of community, of sustainability in mind. And I think that really kept the spirit of the campaign going. And as a consequence of that, I think we tapped into a lot of people who that also spoke to, if it made any sense.
Right.
I think the spirit of the campaign also drives the people that will back you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you had somebody do your video as well.
Yes, yeah, a great mother-daughter team, Debbie and Ariel and their assistant Evan. They are the food guru. And we ended up choosing them because, for one thing, they do really great videos. You know, it's amazing what they can do in 2 minutes. And also because they concentrate on food. So it really made sense to me to go with a team that they're passionate about food. They have a lot of connection with different people in the food world here in the Bay Area. And they really understood the nature of crowdsource and what I wanted to achieve. So I'm very happy that we went with Food Guru. And I think the video that eventually was launched on Kickstarter was quite effective.
Yeah, you have to have, you just have to have a video. Kickstarter has a little course on how to do a video. It's quite clever. But I think it's fair to say you've got to have a video.
Absolutely. You know, people say, oh, it's optional, but that video is the story with which you enchant people. And there's no other way to put it. If you
right.
enchant people in the first minute, you've lost the campaign.
Right.
That I did learn from successful Kickstarter campaigners. Even though the video runs for 2 minutes, and I've seen the stats myself for our campaign, most people drop off in the first minute.
Right.
So that's an important tip right there. Have a 2-minute video, but everything needs to be said in the first minute.
Right.
Yeah, the critical parts need to be there.
Anyone else you wanted to mention in terms of partners or people who helped?
You know, there's one workshop that I went to, and her name is Katie Reed, and her website is unblindmymind.org.
Oh, great name.
Yes, isn't it? And I attended her first seminar because she... her nonprofit deals with children who have autism, and she has literally cured her own child of autism through diet. Part of it also includes fermented foods. So
wonderful.
I attended her first seminar that she put together, and I made a lot of great connections there. And some of the people who were there also, you know, I presented Crowdsource. I didn't sell it or anything because we hadn't launched the campaign yet. But the connections that I made there made me feel really good because, again, I was putting together a project that not only served people who like to eat sauerkraut, but it also had a very important therapeutic value for kids with autism. And it also has, fermented foods also has great value for other health issues that we're dealing with right now.
Right. So, in fact, connecting in with people you really want to help and serve is so, so important.
Yeah, and I was going back to something that's community-based, because at the end of it, with fermented foods, you help your own internal community of microbes, the good ones, thrive. There's definitely an exterior manifestation and an interior connection.
So now you have a group of 3,500 plus supporters. Mm-hmm. How do you interact with them? How do you continue to evolve this into a group of people who are your market or your early adapters or your marketeers, if you will?
Sure. So, you know, with over 3,000 supporters or backers, I really feel that I want to make them feel important. So one way is to do regular updates through Kickstarter, which I have to admit I'm a little bit late. I'm going to send up an update like tomorrow. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, people have asked us, like, when is Crowdsource available? Can we purchase? And we've been needing to turn away people who want to buy them right now because we need to serve the 3,000 plus backers. So we're doing everything that we can to make sure the manufacturing and everything runs smoothly and we get the products in on time here. And the fulfillment is huge because the packaging and the shipping and all of that. So Eric and I, that's our first emphasis, to put the time and energy behind doing the fulfillment in a timely manner so that the backers feel that they've been served. And for the past week, I've also been doing tutorial videos to help the backers who may not be familiar with fermentation. So we were doing a series of 6 tutorials that will only be available to the backers until the end of this year. And then afterwards, we'll open it up and, you know, post it online. So just, and then the next thing too is I want to make our existing website really user friendly, not only for the backers, but for, additional people who have signed into our mailing list. So a lot of education and just sharing recipes and, being a resource for anyone who's interested in fermentation.
Now, Karen, do you continue to work through the Kickstarter or are you shifting to your website? How are you going to grow that? Which platform do you use?
The Kickstarter, we will be growing it through our website. And as I said, our next step after we do the fulfillment is to build a better website so that people can purchase crowdsource online. They can watch tutorial videos. I'll have a blog. And so I'm hoping that it'll be a very interactive website where people can also share their recipes and have a dialogue and sort of, you know, talk about the challenges of fermentation as well as the rewards of having fermented foods in one's diet.
Right. And so when am I getting my crowdsource?
We'll be getting it in November. Exactly. We're not sure yet because we are right now subject to the manufacturing process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to get mine. Now, if you're someone listening and you want to access and follow your work or ultimately buy a crowdsource or get a nutrition consultant or sign up for nutrition consulting, how do we access you? How do we follow you? How do we get a crowdsource?
The best way is to go to www.kraut-source.com. So crowd-source.com.
Okay.
I also have another blog, which is KarenIsCooking.com, and that has more recipes and nutritional tips.
Right, and I've linked to that one on the blog.
Right, thank you. Yeah. So with the crowd-source.com website, you can enter your email and join our newsletter.
Okay.
Which I will be also sending a new one this week. The problem with being an entrepreneur is you don't sleep and your time is very crunched. But I am trying my best to do everything in a timely manner so that people don't feel that they've been abandoned.
Oh, I don't, you know, because I've now funded, I don't know, 5 to 10 crowdfunding things, and I don't feel that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you look at the people, the entrepreneurs that I've funded, you know, they're very conscientious people, and I know when they've got something for me, they'll be in touch.
Yeah.
So I don't worry too much.
Okay. I'm glad that you're giving me that feedback. Thank you.
Well, in closing, are there any do's and don'ts? You know, is there anything else you think for our audience of people who they or someone in their family or network is considering crowdfunding? Any more important lessons or do's or don'ts you'd like to communicate and close with, Karen?
I would say definitely do, you know, several months before you plan to launch your campaign, do your homework and also build up your community, whether it's through social media such as Facebook or Twitter, you really need to have a, I would say, you don't have to have a sizable community, but at least several hundred people who really know you well, who are also excited about what you will be launching. And even tap into them for ideas. You know, for instance, if you're working on a logo or you're not quite sure about whatever idea you would want to launch, ask them for advice so that they feel they are part of the process. That way, when you actually approach them and say, hey, my Kickstarter is live, they feel that they've been part of the process and they are much more likely to contribute and share your idea.
Right.
So that's a definite do. And with don'ts, oh, and the other do is please have a good video. Okay, that's yeah. The don't is don't take it for granted that once you launch it, people will come. You have
right.
to do a lot of homework. And whether you launch it for 30 days or 45 days, sleep really well ahead of time, because during the launch of the campaign, you will not be sleeping. But do take care of yourself. Eat well. You know, try to rest as much as you can. And the other thing that I would maybe, this is a little tricky, because once we launched the campaign, we did have these mass companies, mass media company that promised to, you know, take your campaign to the next level, and you give them X amount of money, and they'll, you know, really blast it everywhere in the press for you. Be very careful with the companies that approach you. I'm not saying that they're all bad, but just be careful. It's just better to build your home base organically.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Right. I couldn't agree more.
And then actually back to another one of the do. If you know of bloggers who may be able to help you with your project, do approach them, be really nice to them, and foster the relationship. Because in our experience with Crowdsource, definitely a few very outstanding bloggers supported us. And as a result of that, I've developed really good relationships with them too.
Fantastic. Well, Karen, I'm so excited about your success. I can't wait to get my Crowdsource and start finally fermenting at home. And we wish you all the best, and we'll be following and watching and praying for your every success. I think what you're doing can help so, so many people.
If I could just add in one little thing, if any of your listeners, you know, want to contact me directly about their own projects, I'm happy to help in any way that I can. So,
oh, that's so generous.
I put it out there because of my own experience and people who have helped me. I'm happy to play that forward and share it with other people.
Well, it's all about community. Karen, you have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It's been a pleasure.